Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Kathy Converse. I serve as your treasurer, and I'm on the Finance and Program Committees. Welcome to this morning, this day, and this chance for all of us to be here together. Prairie is a place where we come to learn about being human. We're not here because we figured out life's questions or because we think we've got it right. We come here to learn more about being in a relationship together, how to listen, how to forgive, how to be vulnerable, how to create trust and compassion in one another, and live in a socially just manner. We do that well here, though not perfectly. In this society, we strive not for perfection, but for authenticity and connection. We welcome people of all races, ethnicities, sexual orientations, abilities and inabilities, family structures, and religious backgrounds. We have no creed to which members must agree. We rely on our ethical principles to guide us. We welcome any guests we have today. We thank you for taking the chance to come and visit us. We'll give you an opportunity later in the service to introduce yourself if you so desire, and we look forward to meeting you. Our services are either led by our part-time minister, Sandy Ingham, a member of our own society, or a guest speaker from the community, as we will enjoy today. Our opening words are, "It is a strange thing, we think that law brings order. Law doesn't. How do we know that law does not bring order? Look around us. We live under the rule of law. Notice how much order we have." Howardson. Our chalice lighting for today. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. Albert Schweitzer. Today I have the pleasure of welcoming Rob Brink. Rob graduated from Minnesota Bible College and earned his Master of Divinity degree at the University of Dubuque Theological Seminary. Rob then served as either an associate or senior minister in Wisconsin and Michigan until 2014. To quote Rob, "Some ministers can drink, some can cuss, but one thing pastors are not allowed to say is, you know what, I don't believe this anymore." When doubts began to interfere with his work, he left rather than hurt the church. Rob has accepted that he's an atheist and happy to be a follower of the Human Manifesto 3. As an intro to what Rob is saying, why do we have rules to tell people right from wrong? If that were true, we would all have stopped at the golden rule. Our rules and laws exist to deal with power imbalances. When one person holds power over another, it bends their choices. Rob will talk to us today about how these power imbalances are a key to understanding and explaining ethical dilemmas. Rob?
Much. Yeah, congratulations. You can now all go home and tell your friends that you met a master of divinity. The arrogance. Wow. Speaking of arrogance, I was stunned to hear this week that we now live in a post-truth world full of alternative facts, which are just as valuable as actual facts. Defending the knowability of reality is a bit too big for my little 15 minutes. So we're going to focus more tightly on ethics, something on which everyone agrees, right? So much easier. The fact is we don't agree. And we don't agree so strongly that we have a hard time even discussing it. So we retreat within the walls of places like this where pretty much everybody gets along. And then we throw verbal grenades at each other. Right? You racist? Oh yeah? Go back to your ivory tower, you pot-smoking hippie? Which is really helpful, right? That's how we come to common ground by arguing on YouTube or Facebook. What I'm offering today is a mental tool that we can use to frame ethical discussions in a way that's more simple and I think more easy to communicate. It's not about is it right or is it wrong or I believe it came out of this book or that book. I agree with my friend Professor Michael Shannon, who said if you have to get your rights and wrongs out of a book, that's a sign of a faulty brain. Ethics is about power, specifically about power imbalance. There are people in this world that we just love to hate. It's just fun. We are completely safe to mock politicians and car salesmen and lawyers. Any joke you want to tell, always safe. You know why? Because they exist. Do you know why it's always safe? Because they exist in a position of constant power. Anytime you interact with a politician, you enter as a supplicant. Anytime you interact with a lawyer, you come with your wallet already out. Anytime you interact with a car salesman, you kind of expect you're going to get took. We just walk in knowing that's the fact, which is why it's always safe to throw those jokes. That's a power imbalance at play that we see all the time. If you want to make it a little darker, a little more intense, there are people we love to hate, and then there are people we honestly just hate because they make us viscerally angry. Okay? I'm pretty sure you've got stuff in your head already. Let me throw out a couple. How about elder abuse in a nursing home? Exactly. It's a position of trust. A position of power over someone who has no power at all. How about Abu Ghraib? A position of trust, a position of power over someone with no power at all. Pedophile abuse by the priesthood? Position of trust? Position of power over someone with no power at all. These things are so dark, we can't even call them bullying anymore. We call them abuse. And they get us so viscerally angry, we want to respond with violence instantly. That's power imbalance. That's the most violent, painful way that we see power played out every day. You can call it whatever you like. You can call it consciousness or free will. You can call it our ability to make decisions or self-determination. It is the thing that makes us us. It is the thing that makes us different from other critters on the planet. We have this self-awareness thing going on, and a power imbalance bends or breaks that self-awareness, that self-determination. What's the difference between murder and manslaughter? Choice.
Yeah.
The murderer thought about it and made a choice. What's the difference between boxing and assault? You chose to step into the ring. What's the difference between a boyfriend and a stalker? You pick the boyfriend. You don't pick your stalker. And when you quit the boyfriend, you can't quit the stalker. That's the whole problem. They violate your choice. What's the difference between insurance and a protection racket? A loan versus a loan shark. It's kneecaps. If there are kneecaps involved in any way in this transaction, that is a loan shark. It's choice and power. Are you with me? This is the heart of ethics. The ancients understood this. You read Dante's Inferno, who's at the center of hell? If you ask an American, most of them haven't read Dante's Inferno, and most of them are going to guess, well, the murderers, obviously. most evil people. Uh-uh. Not according to Dante. You know who's at the center of hell? The betrayers. And who's at the very center of hell, being chewed for all eternity by the mouth of Lucifer?
Judas.
Yeah. Absolutely. The betrayer. Because the ancients understood something we've forgotten. A murderer breaks your body. A con man breaks your ability to trust. A fraudster breaks your ability to choose. If choice and power are the heart of ethics, then how do we live? Well, there's only two options, right? We've either got the power or we don't have the power. Let's examine both of these. First, when you don't have the power, the one you experience every single day is you go out to buy something. You buy a product or a service, and I guarantee you the person you're buying from knows more about the product or service than you do. That's their job. If they didn't, why would you hire them? Do you honestly want a plumber that knows less about plumbing than you? That's the whole reason you pay them. This is what I'd call a situational imbalance. You step into it, you step out of it. But for a time, you're in a situation where you are underneath. In a situational balance, it isn't necessarily a problem. Until the person with the power abuses their power, right? We can go into a farmer's market and expect that the farmer's stall, the operator of the stall, is going to know more about their crop than you do. And as long as they exercise that power with courtesy and decency, it's not a problem. Is it organic? Of course it's organic. Here you go. Here's your money. Here's your stuff. And then you take it home and you get sick. As long as they exercise their power reasonably, no problem at all. The instant they break or abuse their power, it becomes an ethical violation. We still connected? Okay. In those situations where you know you are about to step into or you know you are caught in a situational imbalance, there's a couple things you can do. Really quickly, you can educate yourself. You can do your diligence. You know you're going to buy a car. You know you're stepping into a situation where there's the potential for you to get ripped off. You could trust that they're going to be a nice person, and maybe 90% of the time you're going to be right. That means 10% of the time you're going to get took. So do your diligence. We live in this beautiful age full of free information. Educate yourself. Abuse of power is never something we should expect or accept, but walking in expecting everybody to be their best 100% of the time, that's a recipe for pain. So do your diligence. The second, after you educate yourself, is to increase your visibility. We live in an amazingly connected world. How many of you have one of these little gadgets? Just hold them up so you can see. All right? Just look around. How many of these gadgets, every one of you has more power than ABC had 50 years ago. Every single individual in this room has more power to communicate and become visible than an entire company, a communications company had 50 years ago. So use that power. Make yourself more visible. If you've been taken for a ride, warn somebody else. Hold people accountable. Show your scars. Because your pain is your power. Why? Because we're human beings and we are hardwired for empathy. People cannot help but look at your pain and empathize and connect. On the other hand, some power imbalances aren't situational. They never stop because they are systemic. Do you honestly expect an employee will ever have as much power as the boss? Would you want that to be the case? Not really. I wouldn't. The person flipping fries at McDonald's should not have as much authority as the CEO of McDonald's. They should still have human rights. They should still be respected as a human being, But do I want the guy who can only get a job flipping burgers making CEO-level decisions? No. So there are systemic moments. There are systemic imbalances that are built into not just our organizations, but also our culture. Again, we are human beings evolved from tribal animals, which means we have an inherent, inescapable bias toward people who already have power, toward whatever the situation was yesterday, which means for as long as we continue to be humans, we will always have a bias toward the way things used to be and the people who were in charge yesterday. Those people will always have control, a lever over everybody else. The game of control will always be rigged in favor of the ones who had power yesterday. In that situation, does it help to educate yourself a little bit? Does it fix it? No. In that situation, does it help to make yourself more visible? Yes. Does it fix it? No. In that situation, what I would say is to go a step beyond doing your diligence and becoming more visible. I would say we need community. Note that I said community, not just unity. The fact that I can get 50 people to shout the same thing at the same time does not make it true. The fact that I can get a school board to vote one way or the teachers' union to vote another way doesn't mean either of those two positions are actually correct. Unity yields power. Community harnesses, directs, and softens that power. You see it working right here. In this room, there are people who disagree, and no one's been shot this entire day.
No weapons are allowed. No, there's no fist fights.
A couple fist fights? I think more people would come if that were true. That's why I still am involved in churches. I'm not a minister anymore, but I'm still involved in churches because I believe community is the thing that harnesses, directs, and softens unlimited power. I think it's absolutely key to our survival as a species to remember that we grew up in tribal units, and this is the way we are built to interact with other people whose faces and names we know. People tell me all the time, well, I'm spiritual, I'm not religious, I don't believe in organized religion. That's baloney. I would use stronger phrase, but we're in church. That's baloney. Okay? You don't believe in organized religion? No, you don't believe in organization.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know why? Because it's hard work. Because people are dumb. And when you live in community, you have to exist with these dumb people over and over again. You have to put up with them, and they have to put up with you. It's that work that rubs the rough edges off of each other. That's the softening process. Organization is, ever was, and ever shall be a pain in the butt. But it's worth it. So do it anyway. Because even if this community could never balance the scales, like you can make progress, you've seen your power to make progress. This organization has made progress in this community. Have you not already? Was I not listening at the opening of the service? You guys have already made progress in this community. Things are already better because you exist. Does that mean everything's fixed? No. It's the process. Community is not a bludgeon that you use to fix the problem. Community is the way you survive the fact that the problem is not going away. Community is the lever you use, the wedge you use to get in the door. You really want to shift someone's thinking? Make them a part of your tribe. There's a guy, you can find him online, his name is Daryl Davis. And so far, he's convinced about 200 clan members to give it up.
Wow.
Wouldn't you like to be able to do that?
Wow.
Now, what makes it more compelling, he's an African American. You know how he did it? He made friends. Hey, you can find him online. Write it down right now and go Google it. When you get home, watch. He made a documentary about his experience. And that's all he did, was try and connect with anybody that was willing to connect. This is his hobby. He's a blues piano performer. That's his profession. But for fun, he goes and makes appointments with the KKK. And he says, let's meet for coffee. And we'll sit across the table and I'll hear what you have to say. And he listens. And when he's listened, they can't help but see him as a human being with a face and a name. So once he's connected with them as a human, he asks them a couple questions. Bob, how can you hate me if you don't even know me? Why would you be willing to lynch me? You tell me to my face, now that I'm here. Why would you be willing to lynch me? Does he convince everybody? No. Does he get into fist fights? Occasionally. But he's convinced 200 people. That's 200 more people than me. He is living proof that community has a power. And when you feel powerless, you do your diligence, you educate yourself, you make yourself visible, and you reach out, you build community. It's how you survive, it's how you transform. Now, what about the other option? We already covered if you don't have the power. What if you do have the power? Because I'm looking around, there's a whole lot of people that look like me. Right? And historically in America, historically pretty much in the world, historically pretty much in history, people who look like me get to be in charge. Right? White guys. One of my favorite movies is Emma. And there's a great scene in the movie Emma. Who's the actress in that? Gwyneth Paltrow. There's a scene in the movie where Gwyneth Paltrow has just started. They're playing a parlor game, and the parlor game is you can say one brilliant thing, two smart things, or three dull things, and then it's somebody else's turn. And her friend says, "Oh, that wouldn't be a problem. I'd say three dull things as soon as I open my mouth." And everybody kind of chuckles. And Emma says, "There's still a problem. You'd have to limit yourself to three." And Emma's friend, Mr. Knightley, calls her on it. He asks her why she was so rude, and Emma says, "Oh, I know there's not a better creature in the world, but you must allow that what is good and what is ridiculous are most unfortunately blended in her." And he replies, "They are blended, I acknowledge. And were she prosperous, I could allow much for the occasional prevalence of the ridiculous over the good. Were she a woman of fortune, I would leave every harmless absurdity to take its chance. I would not quarrel with you for any liberties of manner. Were she your equal in station, but Emma, consider how far this is from being the case. She is poor. She has sunk from the comfort she was born to, and if she lives to old age, she must probably sink more. Her situation should secure your compassion." In the olden days, they called that noblesse oblige, the obligation of nobility. It's an obligation not just to use your power fairly. That's just human decency. Noblesse oblige means you don't just use your power fairly. You step beyond fairness into nobility. You use your power for the good. Or in the words of Spider-Man's Uncle Ben, with great power comes
great responsibility.
Okay? If a teenager can figure this out, right? This is what I'm talking about, the simplicity of communication. This is what this helps with. And we saw this on TV recently. Meryl Streep called out the most powerful man now. Okay? Never mentioned his name. We all know who she was talking about. And what did she confront him for? Making fun of someone with disabilities? No. Or, sorry.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Okay. Let me... How did I say this? What did she make... What did she call him out for? Having a sense of humor? No. Mocking someone? No. The problem was he mocked someone who had less power, who had no ability to fight back. It is the imbalance of power that makes it wrong. This is your answer when someone says, oh, you just need to get a thicker skin. Really? You're okay with bullying? That wasn't okay in third grade. Now it's okay? For me, all of this came home the day I first understood my privilege. I was involved in a group called Bridge Builders in Beloit. It was a connection of ministers between Beloit and Janesville. Beloit got a big minority population. Janesville at the time, we had one family, and I knew where they lived. Okay, his name was Joe, and he was my neighbor. He was in my class. So I'm a part of this, and I'm thinking for 5 years, like, I'm the good guy. Look, I'm attending Bridge Builders. I must be the good guy. And at the end of 5 years, one of my friends, who had known me for 5 years, said, where do you shop? I said, Woodman's. He goes, West Side? Yeah, West Side's the best side. Right? How many black people work there? And I knew. I didn't have to answer. I didn't have to think. I didn't have to check. I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt the answer was exactly zero. And I knew that for 5 years I had seen that fact and not cared, not noticed, not cared, had done nothing. That was the day I realized I had a privilege. I have a blind spot. And I need people to correct me, to help me see the things that I don't naturally see. The next week, one of my fellow ministers wrote a letter to the editor. We came back for our next meeting, and I saw the letter he wrote to the editor about, hey, Woodman's, I've been living here for years, and what's the deal? And he just threw it out as a letter to the editor the next time I went shopping. Kid you not, the very next time, less than a week later, who was bagging my groceries? Which means I could have fixed the problem 5 years ago. I just didn't. And even after I saw the problem, I still didn't. Somebody else did. Our problem is not that we are weak. It is that we are far more powerful than we imagine, and we do not use that power for good. Thank you. The first time I gave this speech, I talked very strongly about labor unions, and the pushback from the audience was, well, just because I'm in a union doesn't mean I'm right. What I'm saying is not that you have to choose between organized power and community power. I just think, or I do believe very strongly, that you need both. That organized power is the lever you use to affect change. I think community is the personal connection you use to survive that change. That if we didn't have a place like this, then I don't think we would have places out where we could organize for specifically for an issue to shift that issue. I think this makes that possible. And I think if we don't have both, we have a problem. I see people looking confused. Do I need to clarify that? Okay, so just to expand a little bit. I don't think it's enough to simply organize for power. I think it's important. I think it's necessary. And I completely agree that things will never get better for the burger flipper at McDonald's unless he has a union. I think that's true. But I think if all we have is that, we're missing an opportunity to connect as a human. And that if I want to reach out and change an individual heart, it is the community and not the power that's going to change that person's heart. Does that make sense?
Yep.
That's part of what I was trying to get at today. And this is the second iteration of this talk, and the thing that I'm trying to add to this talk is that choosing to see something as an imbalance of power, instead of choosing to see it as a moral right or wrong, makes the conversation easier. I have friends who are very conservative, and they very, very care about justice and rightness and fairness. Okay, great. That, to me, that sounds just like bullying. Are you cool with bullying? No, bullies are jerks. Great. Why is your president acting like a bully? And what are we going to do about that? Or does this legislation that we're talking about now, this legislation to me looks like it's creating an imbalance of power, or it's levering an imbalance of power to make life more difficult for people who already don't have power. It seems to me like we're kicking somebody who's already down. Does that seem fair to you? That conversation seems much more likely to get somewhere than you're a bad person because you beat up on black people and you're a racist. Then suddenly we're in a fight. And I'm hoping that by framing things as a power imbalance instead of a moral issue, or framing moral issues as a power imbalance, allows us to have a more constructive conversation. I would draw everyone back to Daryl Davis. He's an excellent example of this because he opens not with a soundbite, but with an open ear. He comes in and he says, "You tell me, why do you think this? What do you think? How do you feel? What's going on in your life? Okay, now I've spent the last half hour listening to you. Let me ask you a question." I think that's a much more constructive way to go at someone instead of just going at someone.
Our closing words today: law always chooses sides on the basis of enforcement power. Morality and legal niceties have little to do with it when the real question is, who has the clout? Frank Hebert. Enjoy. Say hi to your neighbor. Have coffee.